so hard, the employees wanna find me. And then wanna hire me. What's 100K to a guy like me? Could you please remind me? Falling so hard, this ain't easy. Working late nights, you best believe me. My grades can only go ace. Never wanna see another B unless I'm Jay-Z. Falling so hard, let's get paid.
This is Morgan Greer.
This is Michaela Hayes, and you're listening to another episode of the Farm So Hard Ambulatory Care Podcast.
All right. Hey, y'all. Welcome to another episode of Farm So Hard Ambulatory Care Podcast. My name is Morgan Greer, and I'm excited today to introduce to you my friend and my co-host for this podcast, Michaela Hayes. She is an ambulatory care clinical pharmacist. She's based out of Charlotte, North Carolina, and she currently works as an independent clinical pharmacist in a consulting firm, Tailored Pharmacist Services. As a background, she obtained her PharmD from Wingate University School of Pharmacy and completed her PGY1 residency training, specifically in ambulatory care at Wake Forest Baptist Health, and her PGY2 residency training in ambulatory care at Duke University Hospital. So today we're just going to be going a little bit more in depth into who Michaela is, getting a better understanding of her journey into the field of pharmacy and specifically ambulatory care, and really just learning about what drives her passion for being on this podcast and the content that she would like to create. So welcome, Michaela.
Thanks, Morgan. It's a pleasure to be here on the opposite side. I kind of feel like I'm in the hot seat, but I'm excited to dive into my version of why I'm excited about the podcast.
Yeah. So last week we kind of dove more into my history, my journey into ambulatory care and just being a pharmacist in general. So now we're switching seats. So to get us started, I think myself and everybody else listening would love to learn a little bit more about your personal journey to just becoming a pharmacist and your educational path to get here.
Yes, that is a great story. So just to go back to like my personal history in pharmacy, you got to go back even further and know that I have a long history of setting long-term goals for myself, starting at a very young age. And I think that that stems from being very centered in my family. And really, my sister's 9 years older than me, so I really take what my family's guidance is seriously. And when I was about 8 years old, well, I started playing softball at 5 years old and then decided I wanted to play college softball at 8 years old, which is very early. I had a lot of help from family and things like that. But basically, I was like, I really want to pursue this journey in pharmacy, or I'm sorry, in softball. And I started playing on travel teams and just going all across the country. And then I started to get into middle school, maybe around 12 years old. And my sister's 9 years older than me. So she was in college at Appalachian State University, majoring in chemistry. And she knew that I loved math and science, and she kind of pointed me in the direction of pharmacy to try to look into it, because she knew I didn't like blood and guts or smells, and she knew that I liked math and science, so pharmacy was a good option there. And I knew, just like with softball and pharmacy, if I just set my sights on a goal and just kind of headed in that path, that I could attain more information as I got there and kind of pivot or adjust my goals or my journey as needed based on my interests or more information that I learned. But, you know, long story short, I ended up going down a really deep path with softball, and something that was super interesting, you know, having these two loves merge with pharmacy and softball, was that Division I college athletics do not really enjoy having a science major as their athlete, because they get pulled out of a lot of sports activities like practice, or maybe it conflicts with games with their schedule for school, like afternoon labs or different classes. So when I was going down this path of recruitment with softball, I was really getting a roadblock when I was going to bigger schools saying, you know, we really think it would not be a good fit with you having a science major. Like, if you'd be interested in exploring other majors, that would be a great option. And we can like further these conversations. But right now, this is something we're really worried about. Well, then when I broadened the scope to Division II, I saw that they were more willing to work with you. The practice and like game hours required for the sport were not as intensive, which was great. So it was really a better fit for merging pharmacy with softball in college to like step into the Division II role. So I ended up completing my goal of being a softball player in college, and went and played Division II college softball at Queens University of Charlotte, which is really close to home, which I really value. And even in pharmacy school, I completed that close to home. It's just something that I wanted that like cushion of having family and friends nearby to support me in tough times in my life. So I majored in biochemistry while I played softball at Queens, and I basically just knocked out the pre-pharmacy coursework knowing that my goal was to apply to pharmacy school. And then from there, I applied to pharmacy school. I only applied to Wingate University School of Pharmacy, which is about 15 minutes from my house. I had a pretty good relationship with the admissions team there and just knew like that's the only place I wanted to go, and had a good feeling after talking to them about like my grades and things with all my coursework from my pre-pharmacy, I guess my prerequisites with the pharmacy program. And so that's something that I would encourage someone who's worried about. Like when I was going through the journey in college, I was super worried about having the grades to get into pharmacy school, you know, all the different requirements and checkboxes that I needed to make sure I was doing during college to be a strong applicant for pharmacy school. And something that really helped is just, you know, unveiling the uncertainty by going directly to the school of pharmacy that you're interested in or one that's close to you and saying, hey, like, what are the things that I need to be doing? What does a strong applicant look like? And, you know, what do my grades look like as far as being a strong applicant? Like specifically, I brought my transcripts and everything. I remember being on the couch at home with my parents over like Christmas break. And I was like, you know, I'm just so stressed about my grades. And I don't know, like I got a B in calculus. And like, is this going to derail my plans? And they're like, well, let's just go to the pharmacy school and see what happens. And it was a great conversation. So I encourage anybody who's worried about it to go directly to the source. And then, you know, there's a decline in pharmacy applicants to pharmacy schools. Like, so you're probably in a better boat than you were when we were in this process as well. But that's kind of my journey. So I ended up getting accepted to Wingate University School of Pharmacy. So that was my journey in the undergrad path and into pharmacy school.
Yeah, I think your experience is pretty unique. And this happened a lot in my pharmacy school as well, as far as like trying to balance extracurricular interest with like your professional goals. So I know at least in my College of Pharmacy, we had people like myself, I was in band. We had cheerleaders, dancers, people trying to play track and field, basketball. We had a lot of athletes or people in like those more time intensive curricular activities. And so there's kind of times where you feel like, oh, I can't do both or I have to choose one. And so there's great examples of people out there who didn't have to choose. And I even know there's a girl who was a couple years below me in pharmacy school, and she's a currently practicing pharmacist, and she's actually an NFL cheerleader. So you definitely can do both. There's definitely room for you to achieve all of your goals, even if they're not always pharmacy oriented. So I definitely vibe with you on that for sure. And I know there's a lot of people who maybe are in that position right now and they're like, oh, I'm going to have to choose. Like, I can't play a sport and, you know, be a pre-med major or a pre-pharmacy major or whatever it is they want to do. But that's not necessarily the truth. Moving forward, I think we would all love to learn more about like your professional journey to specifically becoming an ambulatory care pharmacist and kind of what did that look like for you, especially considering your journey initially going through more of the extensive like 4-year undergrad, then 4-year pharmacy degree, and then pursuing 2 years of residency training?
Yeah, that's a great question. And when I entered pharmacy school at Wingate, I really, from day one, when they started talking about residency and using your clinical brain in your career as a pharmacist, like going outside the traditional community pharmacy setting, I was interested at, like as soon as they started talking about it. And I knew, I didn't know what it looked like because you're brand new. Some people may have experience, but I was very unaware of the different routes outside of just the community setting. But I knew I wanted to use my clinical training, and I really liked the idea of working in an interdisciplinary healthcare team and working in the outpatient setting, similar to why I love softball. I loved working on a team, and I loved, you know, everything about pharmacy outside, like everything about pharmacy, being a clinical practitioner, basically. And you're learning all this stuff in pharmacy school, and it's really interesting. And I'm like, I want to use this moving forward. I don't want to just be limited to the scope that I'm practicing. So I ended up meeting with a mentor early on in my I would say it's in the fall of my P1 year, as soon as they started talking about residency. I wanted to kind of gain perspective from him about okay, these are my interests. This is what I'm thinking. What do I need to be doing to position myself for success in my aspirations and my interests? And he knew me from class, and I'm pretty outgoing, as you are. And he was like, I think ambulatory care would be a good route for you to explore just because you're very outgoing. You like working and talking to people. I think it would align with your skill sets, your personality, and maybe even your interests. And at this point in my pharmacy journey in school, I wasn't really sure what ambulatory care meant. I understood that you ambulate in and out of a clinic. The patients are ambulating into a clinic. But other than that, I wasn't sure like what options were within ambulatory care. So from there, and I would encourage pharmacy students to do and think about this as well, is just I knew that I wanted to set myself up for success if I wanted to pursue postgraduate training, not necessarily confining myself to having to do this, similar with pursuing like being a college athlete or pharmacy, just like setting my sights on a goal and making pivots as necessary, but giving myself the opportunity to do it if I wanted to. So that looked like, you know, being involved in leadership positions, getting research experience, trying to just have work experience, shadowing opportunities, anything I could to just set myself up for the option if that's what I wanted to do, residency, fellowship, or just go into clinical practice. It's not going to hurt you to be prepared for it, but it will hurt you if you're not prepared early on when you get there and then you don't have the background to be a strong candidate if you end up wanting to apply. So I ended up gaining a ton of AmCare experience in all my projects and research, just like creating a profile of my interest is ambulatory care. So when I go to apply to residencies, they're like, yep, she's had a consistent interest in ambulatory care, and this looks like a good fit for our program. And I, you know, continued to meet with, I would just reach out to different pharmacy school professors, see if they had opportunities for me to get experience in ambulatory care, whether that looked like research or getting, you know, shadowing opportunities in different aspects or what have you. From there, I applied during pharmacy school each year for the FELS program, which is forgivable education loans for service. And that just means you can pay back your loans for pharmacy school by like serving patients of North Carolina instead of paying it back in a monetary value. But there's, you know, stipulations. So you have to work in maybe a nonprofit, or you have to work in North Carolina, obviously. And I just kind of kept those guidelines in my head as I went forward. And I got the FELS loan. I was in the FELS loan program 3 of my 4 years of pharmacy school. So that narrowed my residency focus to North Carolina, because I could go outside of North Carolina if I wanted to, but it wouldn't satisfy that requirement. And you have a certain time period you have to do it in. So that really narrowed my residency scope to North Carolina. And then when I started going down the residency path for my PGY1, I was like, okay, do I want to apply to acute care programs or AmCare programs? And I really kept an open mind when I went into mid-year and looked at all programs. And then as I went down that path, I was like, you know what? AmCare really vibes with me. I just like get a good feeling from the AmCare programs. Not that I got a bad feeling from the acute care, but it really helped me to narrow my focus. I was like, I don't see myself practicing outside of ambulatory care or in the inpatient setting, just from my personal interests and what I want to do in my career. So I narrowed it down not only to North Carolina, but also to ambulatory care PGY1s, which limited the number of applications that I could apply to for pharmacy residency. So from there, I just really dug deep into all the resources out there outside of my pharmacy school about like how to be a strong candidate. So that looked like reading books or listening to podcasts or seeking mentorship within my school of pharmacy and outside of it. And I really got a lot of strong knowledge about how to be a strong candidate. And I did well in the match process. And then I did the same thing with my PGY2. So I was applying to only AmCare programs, only in North Carolina, and implemented the same strategies and did well again. So I'm like, okay, well, now I really enjoyed learning about what pharmacy residents were doing when I was in pharmacy school and learning their tips and everything about how they're performing. And so I was like, let me take this knowledge and turn around and give it to people who really need it. And there's not a lot of voices out there talking about it. And it's a really strange space when you're applying to residencies. For me, at least, I don't know your experience, Morgan, but you have your core group of friends in pharmacy school that really get you through the process. And then you're in residency application season and you're kind of competing with these people with the same programs. And it can be very strange space because you're in competition with each other, but you've helped each other this whole way. So personally, I just like kind of kept all my feelings about residency application stress to myself and like talked about certain things with them, you know, in a group setting, but anything I had, I really brought to my family as like a really safe place to talk about it and stress about it. And yeah. I'm like, it really helps to have an outside person to help you through this process and to bounce ideas off of, because you don't feel like you can always use your peer support system that you have in pharmacy school, at least from my own perspective. I can't speak to others, but that's just how I felt about it. So after residency, after I got into residency, I started disseminating content about like how to be a strong candidate, what the process looks like, my journey through the process. And I had a lot of students reach out and a lot of positive feedback from people about what I was doing. And I just grew that as I went through my journey in residencies, both residencies. And then that's part of the business that I started after I got out of residency, and we'll talk about that. Well, we can talk about it now. So after residency, how I got to my position now, I had the choice to like apply for clinical pharmacist jobs, like in the AIM care setting. And I also had mentors, and I learned different processes about how entrepreneur pharmacists kind of started their own positions. And I had this kind of business going about helping pharmacy residency candidates. And I'm like, why don't I just like start a business and see where that goes? So I ended up starting a clinical pharmacist consulting firm called Tailored Pharmacist Services. And one piece of that is integrating clinical pharmacist services into primary care physicians' offices that are independent practices, like not affiliated with a large institution. Then the other half of that is coaching people who want to have a strong application for pharmacy residency, have someone hold their hand through the whole process, or pick and choose whatever is most important for them or what's most helpful. They can have the free content that I'm doing on my Instagram or YouTube at The Faithful PharmD, or they could work one-on-one with me or get help on letters of intent or the interviewing process, reviewing their CV, reviewing presentations for the residency interview season. Everything, whatever they want. So, and then the third piece is really consulting as a clinical pharmacist with businesses or directly with providers, if that's what they want, or with patients. I know my grandmother is in an assisted living scenario, and my mom is trying to manage that. And if she didn't have somebody who knew the healthcare system in and out, had access to all the information about the drugs, when my grandma starts experiencing side effects, she just reaches out to me. She's got a really long list of medications. I'm able to really take a dive into all those things and see what potential problems could be causing the side effects that she's experiencing, or ways we can optimize her therapy and things like that. And I was like, that's a need that people need access to a pharmacist. So just like implementing different areas of the business and getting started in clinics is a slow process. And my dad was an entrepreneur, so it kind of gave me that entrepreneur bug to start this journey. But I really get inspired by listening to other pharmacist entrepreneurs talk about where their space is and what they've done and how they're doing it. And that's what I want to bring to this podcast as well.
Yeah, I think that's the interesting thing that both of us are going to bring to this podcast, is the fact that we have very different journeys into this. And then even out of residency, you know, we have very different clinical practice settings. But I think, you know, the biggest thing that I get asked, at least, is especially going into becoming an ambulatory care clinical pharmacist and like surrounding this initial question was about, you know, there are ambulatory care focused PGY1s or community focused PGY1s. And I'm somebody who went the more traditional, like inpatient acute care PGY1 route, and you know, maybe how does somebody come to that decision? And so we've kind of both shared how we got to those decisions and each of our individual like introductions. And so I think people are going to definitely benefit from those two different perspectives of like, oh, do I do a traditional or do I do an AM care community care focused? And then from your perspective as well, like recognizing that it's your option to do that, but then it might narrow down your potential programs a little bit, especially if geographically you're also limiting yourself for various reasons. And I know like in our specific class, because we went through the process in the same year at the same time. And so that was a very competitive year for whatever reason. It also was a weird year because it was the first year virtual interviews were even a thing, because when COVID happened, the class of 2020, their interviews and stuff for residency had already been completed. That was already over. So for us, we not only had a very large number of people going through the residency process, but we also had a very large number of people going through virtual interviews for the same time. What was that even like? What did that mean? And so to your point, I echo your sentiment in that it was a very weird year for your pharmacy school classmates and that kind of interaction with them. And you felt very isolated and felt very alone because you didn't want to go and talk to your friend who's also going through the same thing. Maybe you got less interviews than them, or maybe they got an interview at the program that you wanted to, but then you didn't get that interview. And it's such a weird, like, taboo space to be in. And that's a whole separate podcast we could probably have a discussion about. But yeah, I think that's really comforting. And the dynamics may be a little bit different because, to your point, pharmacy enrollment across the country is going down as the years go on. So that might be a little bit different of a dynamic, but still might be a similar thing that people are going through. Just, you know, the dynamics of being in pharmacy school and having type A people all in one classroom you're so used to. I had this conversation with one of our medical students in clinic. You're so used to like everybody being in undergrad, maybe like the top student, the top of their class. And then you throw all of those people into a room and it's, you're all the top. You're all trying to be type A. You're all, you know, the same type. So nobody's, you know, top of the top notch anymore. So it's just very interesting space. But looking more into ambulatory care, you know, you've talked about this a little bit, but you know, what really ignited your passion for ambulatory care? And I guess the goals that you're looking to achieve for this podcast and why you're really looking to translate those passions you have for ambulatory care into this podcast forum.
Yeah, I think the number one and number two reasons that really ignited my fuel for wanting to be an ambulatory care pharmacist was that I love working in an interdisciplinary care team. I love being a part of a team from my history in team-based sports. And I just really think that patients benefit when we all come together with our different unique skills and assets and strengths to help improve their care and help educate them on their chronic disease states and optimize their therapy. And everybody has their own unique set of skills and strengths that they bring to this game, whether it's a physician or a pharmacist or other members of the healthcare team. And then having the ability to spend one-on-one time with patients to improve their health, spend time educating them on their diseases and optimizing their pharmacotherapy regimens, educating them on medications. You know, I think that access to care is a really big problem, and pharmacists can be that interim person who connects with them over and over as many times as they need in between the visits with their primary care provider to really drive the points home. I know over and over I've heard that patients get new diagnoses like diabetes and they have no idea what they're doing. One, they're overwhelmed with the whole process and they just want somebody to walk them through step by step and hold their hand through this really scary transition in their life. And a lot of times they give them their glucometer. I've worked in the community setting where people came and they said, I was diagnosed with diabetes. I'm not sure what's going on. And here's this glucometer that's in the box and I don't know what I'm doing. And they said that you would educate me on it. And the community pharmacists have a lot going on and they don't even have the capacity to spend the time needed for the correct education for these patients. Now, they're a great access, but it's really not fair to throw that on the community pharmacist as well. We should be like coming up with a system within the healthcare team to figure out how to solve this issue, number one. But going back to your point, I think the foundation for my love for ambulatory care is really practicing outpatient medicine. I really fell in love with the disease states as well, managing primary care and then working in specialty clinics within ambulatory care, like in transplant, neurology, infectious disease, endocrinology, and more. But really what I'm looking to accomplish with the Farm So Hard Ambulatory Care podcast is bringing awareness to the versatility of ambulatory care practice and using this platform to create a community while providing valuable and inspiring content for other ambulatory care pharmacists, because that's why I even started my business. I was inspired by other AmCare pharmacists doing really cool things. And I'm like, well, I want to try that. I want to get in groups like that. I want to be inspired and I want to continue inspiring others. And then really promoting and advocating for and advancing our pharmacy profession, and then helping to share different practice models of ambulatory care and how they can sustain their practice model through billing and just bringing awareness to all those types of things.
Yeah, for sure. I think there's a lot of cool work that we're going to be able to do with the podcast. And, you know, again, ambulatory care is multifaceted. We've said it a bunch of times, but that it's never just going to be clinical for us. There's the business side. There's the development side. There's so many avenues that we're going to get to go down and talk about. And there are conversations among ambulatory care pharmacists all the time of like, how can we progress? How can we move forward, be better, develop more services that are really going to impact patients at the end of the day? Because that's why we do this. But I would love to, you know, ask, and I think we all would wonder, is there any like clinical topics that are going to be, you know, that you plan to discuss that are kind of like maybe more top of the radar for you?
Really, my vision is to take a deeper dive into ambulatory care, discuss the different roles that ambulatory care pharmacists have, and interviewing guests who have implemented cool ambulatory care models to shed light on how they're creating these sustainable and thriving models. But I also look forward to reviewing clinical topics, like diving deep into guideline updates or things that would be helpful for our AmCare pharmacist practitioners in creating a community to really add value to their lives.
Yeah, for sure. Now, you've kind of already mentioned it a little bit, but are there other ways you're planning to engage with our audience via social media, other platforms? Where can we get in touch with you?
Yeah, great question. Of course, the podcast. We love to hear your feedback, comments, and like engaging with our audience through the podcast is one option. I have different social media accounts. So Instagram and YouTube is at The Faithful Farm D. I'd love for you to connect with me on LinkedIn. Sorry. My name is Michaela Hayes Farm D, and my business is also there. So in LinkedIn, it's Tailored Pharmacist Services. And then we have our website, www.tailoredpharmacistservices.com. So check us out.
I love it. I love it. All right. So, you know, you obviously are very passionate about, you know, reflecting on your own journey and then kind of providing that perspective to, you know, whether it be learners or current pharmacists, people within ambulatory care. So what are some of the major like challenges and successes that come to mind for you when looking back on your own personal journey?
Great question. I think to start with major challenges that stand out in ambulatory care, I think they include reimbursement issues, which stem from pharmacists having limited acknowledgement as providers from healthcare payers. And because pharmacy services are always not adequately reimbursed, this leads to financial challenges for implementing and sustaining clinical pharmacy models. And then pharmacists are so expensive, and if they're unable to bill for quality service that they can provide, it's difficult to advocate for our value and integration into a practice. I mean, when I'm trying to start clinical practices in an independent physician's office that has no idea who I am, no idea what a clinical pharmacy does, what our background is, I mean, I have to come in there and really say, this is the value that I can bring to you. Improving patient outcomes, you know, going into detail on this, of course, but reducing provider burnout, facilitating additional touch points for your patients to make sure that they're getting everything they need to improve their outcomes and really meet their quality care, value-based care needs and metrics. And then, you know, improving patient satisfaction as well in that, because patients really want me as a patient. I want to talk to my primary care provider and not feel rushed and really feel like I'm empowered to have a really good conversation and bring all my needs up. If it's a 15-minute conversation and I have four things I want to talk about and we go down a rabbit hole on point two, I'm going to forget maybe about points three and four that I want to talk about, and it's going to be months before I can get back into the office. So that's just, I think, a major challenge is integrating pharmacists into this model and really having a sustainable way to implement them into the model. And then for major successes that stand out to me, I think pharmacists are able and are consistently demonstrating that we add value to the interdisciplinary healthcare team, whether it's through improved inpatient outcomes, particularly with chronic disease state management. I mean, we're getting integrated into these large healthcare systems. Obviously, it's helpful, or they wouldn't be putting the money forward to having us in these positions, right? And we can contribute to preventative care and provide medication optimization, chronic disease state and medication education. And we can serve, like I said, additional touch points in between visits with their primary care provider. And we've definitely made small incremental wins with the pharmacists, which include getting closer to our improved autonomy. But we definitely have a long way to go. And I think talking about it is the best way to advocate for ourselves. And that's why I believe it's so important to practice at the top of our license using the current laws that we have in place, given through the collaborative practice agreement or the clinical pharmacist practitioner CPP designation that North Carolina has, to really show like, hey, we've gotten this more, we've made way into more autonomy, and look, we're using it. Look at what we're doing with it. You know, this is substantial evidence to improve our, you know, fight in the long run toward ultimate provider status, right?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I think that's kind of the battle we're always facing, is we can always, you know, show our impact on patient care outcomes. That is clear. There is so much evidence and data on that for sure out there. But I think the one thing that we continue to struggle with is that reimbursement piece. And so unfortunately, our healthcare here in the United States is very revolving around revenue and financials. And so even though we as pharmacists can prove, you know, the impact that we can make on patient care, if the dollar signs don't add up, sometimes it's just not feasible for us to be part of certain teams because of that reasoning alone, which is unfortunate. It shouldn't be that way. Patients should absolutely have access to the best care possible, however that comes. And so I think that's something that we're seeing slowly start to shift. There's been several states within the past week that have had pharmacists be able to register as Medicaid providers in those states. I know Wisconsin was one, Virginia was one that added a couple months ago. So we're moving in the right direction every single day. And there's been pharmacists years and years before us that have fought for us to have even the capabilities that we have today, because even 20 years ago, our positions were probably not as popular or feasible as they are today. So we're going to continue to be part of that kind of living legacy that goes forward for, you know, making sure that we're able to practice at the top of our license in the future. So kind of closing out here, is there any additional advice you would give to aspiring pharmacists, learners, people in residency looking to ambulatory care? You're full of aspiring messages, and that's kind of half of your business and your role currently. But is there anything else that maybe you haven't mentioned that would be just great nuggets of advice for them?
Yeah, I think in pharmacy school, they talk about residency, but I can't stress enough like how important it is to dive into your interests as you see them, or even before you see them. Try to seek out ways to figure out what you're interested in and be able to position yourself to have a good seat at the table when it comes to going to the next step in your pharmacy career. And seeking mentorship in pharmacy school from your professors and future pharmacists that are in the career paths that you're interested in is so vital. I mean, even if you just, I know students who are interested in nuclear pharmacy and they've gotten shadowing opportunities and job opportunities in the space. And that's like creating your path, right? You don't wait and see what is offered to you. Go and seek it out and figure out what you could potentially be interested in and where your niche is in pharmacy. Even though me and you have very similar backgrounds, we also have very unique niches based on our own clinical, you know, interests and experiences. So that's really something that I would tell pharmacy students, is to put yourself out there and try to figure it out rather than waiting until it's potentially too late to be the best that you could be for your next step in your career and what you're interested in. And then advocate for the experiences that you want. They can create rotations for you. I mean, I've heard of just this year talking to students about how they created their own rotation where it has never been done before, just because they were interested in it, or they created research programs because they were interested in getting more research experience in leadership positions. And just because it's not there doesn't mean it's not available to you. And if you just start connecting with anybody, you can potentially create the opportunity for yourself. And that is just showing a lot of initiative, which is an awesome asset in itself. So that's what I would tell a pharmacy student, or my previous self when I was in pharmacy school.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that is the biggest piece of advice you can ever give to any learner, whether they're still in school or even in residency, like PGY 1 year, is just the versatility. Like, make sure you're putting yourself in these different spaces. And even if you're not 100% interested in it, like, I always would tell people, like, do an infectious disease rotation. They're like, I have no interest in infectious disease. I'm like, well, sadly, infectious disease is in everything that you do, whether you do ambulatory care or transplant or critical care, you will have it regardless. And I think, again, one of my things that I look back on is I'm really glad I had a lot of versatility. I, you know, did exactly what you're recommending. I went and created new rotations that had never been done before. Like, I did a whole substance use rotation. And then that was the first year that was ever offered for our particular school. And so just like continuing to push the boundaries and not just be comfortable with like what's necessarily just handed to you and part of the like typical curriculum of a pharmacy student or even a pharmacy resident is like, okay, maybe you do have an ambulatory care interest going into PGY1, but push yourself. Say, I want to do a critical care rotation. That's exactly what I did. I did a critical care rotation. Did not like it one bit, but I did it. I have the experience to reflect on. So now I have that in my back pocket if I ever needed to think about, you know, pressors or anything like that. Hopefully not in the outpatient setting. I would never have to think about that, but here we are. All right. We've done all that, kind of the professional stuff, but moving kind of just very, and as a closing part, you know, you as a person, obviously you're not a pharmacist 24/7 all the time. Maybe you are, I don't know. But you obviously have some hobbies and interests outside of being a pharmacist. So kind of tell us about what those things are when you're not being, you know, Dr. Hayes.
I love it. Yeah. One big area that I love and I've been in my whole life is horses. And I really got that love from my mom. So she had a family farm that was passed down throughout the generations. And that's where they live now. And that's where I grew up. And I really, you know, like to have a diverse array of activities to be able to really get out of pharmacy. I think even in pharmacy school and in residency, and even now, I love to step out and have different things that are completely not pharmacy related to let my mind go free and rejuvenate myself to step back into my career. So horses has always been that for me. And I'm currently, I guess, in the market for a horse and figuring out what that step looks like.
That's expensive, is it not?
Yeah.
That's like very expensive.
Yeah, going on that, like when I was a kid, we got my first horse. We got our first horse as a family, I guess, when I was 10. And that's kind of when we got back into horses. And then we moved out onto our land and really got into it. Now we have 5. And my dad, we went out to Louisville, Kentucky to get my horse.
Yeah, and that's where I did my first year residency.
I know. I loved it. I want to go back.
Have you been to the Derby?
No, that's the goal. That's
quite
the
an experience.
Like,
quite an experience.
Did you go when you were at residency?
I did. Oh. Of course I had to. There's Kentucky things and Louisville things that you have to do while you live in Louisville, Kentucky. So one of those was going to the Derby and then also doing like bourbon trail, going to the bourbon distillers and stuff. The Kentucky Derby is an interesting thing for Louisville, Kentucky, because it is a whole 2-week celebration and businesses close. The schools close. Like, it is a recognized holiday in the city of Louisville. And so that was always very interesting to me. And pro tip, if you ever want to go to the Derby, is apparently the locals go the day before, which is called Oaks Day. And they dress all in pink and it's for breast cancer awareness, because Oaks Day is when the female horses typically race. That was the historic context, but then, female horses could still race at the Kentucky Derby now, but like when the Kentucky Derby was first being, you know, put into place, the female horses had a whole separate day. And so that's when all the locals go to not have to deal with all of the traffic on actual Kentucky Derby day. And you also think Kentucky Derby is like multiple races and like things like that. No, it's really just a 1 2-minute race. So you have a 2 week celebration and whole ta-da for a 2 minute race.
I know. Yeah.
So it's kind of funny. It's kind of funny, but
yeah, we went to Louisville, Kentucky to get him. And I was like, I definitely want to go to the Derby. That's on our bucket list as a family, to just go out maybe for like a week or a weekend and do the Derby. But I remember when we went out to get my horse, it was this, Kentucky is like the king of horses. So yep. They have these huge barns, huge farms. I mean, like the barns are huge and you can ride in them. It's crazy. And we went out there and we pull up to this house. Well, it's like a really nice house, like think Gone with the Wind. And then like mm-hmm. the huge barn that you can ride in. It's like a 100 stall barn.
So crazy. Much land out there.
Yep. And so we sit down and we pull up and I'm talking to my dad and I'm like, oh my goodness, like I want to be a horse trainer. Like I want to do this. And my dad's like, wait. He's like, you don't want to be the horse trainer. He was like, that guy is a lawyer. And he was like, that's how he supports this financially very taxing hobby. So he's like, you need to find something that is like going to make you some money and then do horses as a hobby. So that's kind of how we got to pharmacy, right? Like a good career that could support that hobby. But horses has always been something that I'm going to come back to. And we ride with my parents and we do a lot of trail riding, which is like pleasure. So we have this live-in quarter horse trailer. It's like a camper basically. And the horses are in the back and we go to the mountains and ride and camp. And it's like glamping more, but it's really fun. And we have this place that we go all the time and we watch the Kentucky Derby. It's got like a restaurant bar and there's like an equestrian community and you can camp on a river. It's really cool. So we love the Kentucky Derby. That's definitely on the bucket list. But then outside of horses, I love music and dancing. So there's a lot of story behind this. Okay. So I grew up playing in a country band at church. And we talked about this on your episode, but we basically had a bluegrass band and I played guitar, took lessons, and then I started to dabble with other instruments. And then I really used music and singing as a way to get out of my head or out of pharmacy or just like express myself in a different way. And then about 5 years ago, I started dancing and it's two-step country dancing. So it's like swing. You're like doing all these moves and stuff. And that's how I met my fiance. I asked him to dance. So I'm pretty outgoing. I'm really not afraid to, I don't know. I'm not afraid to like put myself out there, which is why I'm not afraid to dance, I guess. But you definitely have to put yourself out there. It looks stupid. But then you get the hang of it and it gets better.
I love it. You know, I think what's really funny about you and I wanted to say this in the last episode, is they always talk about pharmacy being such a small world. And it is, for sure. But the fact that Michaela and I came from literally the same exact town in Charlotte, never met one another ever before. We know each of the high schools. We went to separate high schools, but literally we're in the same town, maybe 10 minutes from each other, had very similar like career paths. Like obviously both ended up as pharmacists, not only pharmacists, but ambulatory care pharmacists. And it's just so funny how like sometimes the world can be so small too. Like they always talk about pharmacy being such a small world, but I love that's like our fun fact that we never knew each other before like coming on the podcast, but we literally lived like 10 minutes from each other in our childhoods.
I know, that's so crazy. And then, yeah, that is just wild to think about how it is a small world. The further you go along, you're like, everything is just really, really connected and everybody knows everybody. So it's really important to, you know, do your best to make a good impression in whatever you do, you know, have a goal and everything. But one other fun fact is that I'm getting married this year.
Yeah.
So we're getting married in October. So I'm going to bring all of the information about wedding things to the podcast as well. But I wanted to let you know before we get into that is that my vibe for the wedding is stress-free and classic, rustic, low maintenance. So okay.
Very on shout brand.
Yes, exactly. Very on shout brand. Out to my husband for getting a hashtag low maintenance girl.
I love that. That's so funny. Yeah. I always thought I'd maybe want a fall wedding one day. that, but yeah, that's very on brand for you. I love that.
Yeah. I was like, fall wedding, I would match the aesthetic of the mountains. If we go, like, we're going to the mountains, we're getting married like up top on a, like on a hill, and then there's just the mountains all around it. And I'm like, well, my hair will match. We have to do October.
I love that. All right. Well, thank you, Michaela, for, you know, coming and just telling us a little bit more about yourself and your journey through pharmacy. I know that's going to help a lot of our viewers and listeners kind of relate to us and see, you know, where we've come from and, you know, how we've gotten to this point. And then also sharing your insights into our profession and, you know, where we're going to go. So we look forward to our next episode where we're going to take a deeper dive into the ambulatory care profession, really talk about things like collaborative practice agreements and really advocating for our profession even more. And serving is really a connecting place for all professionals and more specifically, obviously, ambulatory care pharmacists. But if you like this episode, please like, comment, share, send to your friends, students, learners, pharmacists within the ambulatory care space. And we will catch you next time on the Farm So Hard Ambulatory Care Podcast.
So I farm so hard, employees wanna find me, and then wanna hire me. What's 100K to a guy like me? Could you please remind me? Farm so hard, this ain't easy. Working late nights, you best believe me. My grades can only go ace. Never wanna see another B unless I'm Jay-Z. Farm so hard, let's get paid. Let's get paid.